Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Smiley Kaufman for 61.
Wow. I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
What's up, y'all? This is Smiley's producer and co-host, Charlie Hume, and we have a great conversation to share with you today. There are only two guys on Earth who have done what our next guest has. One of them is Tiger Woods, so that's usually pretty good company to keep. He won the U.S. Junior Am at CCNC in Pinehurst, North Carolina back in 2021, and he's coming off a victory in the U.S. Am at Cherry Hills in Denver, Colorado. I'm, of course, referring to Nick Dunlap. A really cool conversation here. Nick grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, which is, of course, Smiley's hometown. So you'll hear some stories about two of those guys and the games they played together growing up. And, of course, Nick's rise as a junior golfer to get to where he is today. So without further ado, let's get right to it. Here is Smiley with Nick Dunlap.
Nick Dunlap, the U.S. amateur champion, joining the Smiley Show. And I tell you what, our interview time was at 1:30, and this is probably the best text I've ever gotten in my entire life from somebody. It's the coolest thing ever. And I was like, hey, did you get the Zoom link? And you're like, hold on, give me 10 minutes. I'm talking to Nick Saban. Like that. I mean, your life just went, it's just totally changed. I mean, like, how, you know, how surreal has this whole deal been?
It's unbelievable, man. Just the last 24, 48 hours of all this. Like I finally, this morning I was, you know, it was by myself, and just to wake up like, man, like that actually just happened. Like I just won United States Amateur. I dreamed of it. You're growing up as a kid. I remember 4 years ago playing in Pinehurst in my first one and touching it at registration, be like, man, like being able to hold this would be, you know, a dream come true. And actually that dream coming true, you know, 2 days ago, it's unbelievable.
Well, it was fun to watch and I loved being there all week, but I have to first ask, what did he tell you? Did he say anything?
No, we talked a little bit about it. Apparently he shot 73 and beat some people pretty bad down in Jupiter. But no, we talked a little bit about, some of the games coming up for them and it being an absolute, it's 105 degrees here.
it's got to be brutal at camp right now.
But no, he apparently it was cool. He was telling me he was hitting balls at our facility and went inside to watch the last couple holes of the final match and called me right as it finished, which was pretty neat.
Have you heard the story about JT when he called Nick Saban right after they won the national championship? Have you heard this story?
You got to tell me this.
I think JT was like watching the game with some buddies and they had just won the national championship. Maybe this was like 30 minutes after or something like that. And Justin decided to call Nick and said, like, you know, just expecting to leave a voicemail that Saban picks up. And he's like, oh, hey, coach. And he's like, hey, Justin. He's like, well, congrats.
So, completely taken off guard.
Yeah, man, that's like worst nightmare of him actually answering in that situation. But it's still pretty cool to have Nick Saban answer your phone. But so maybe you're next in that. You can call Saban after you win, or if they win national championships.
Maybe, yeah. He's Mr. Tuscaloosa, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right. So, are you getting honored for any, like, what game? I know you got to be going to the half or, you know, at the 20 yard line or the midfield for one of these games. Have they told you what game it's going to be?
I know, coach, I think it's gotten confirmed, but I think it's going to be the Texas game in between the first and second quarter. I know it's going to be legit.
Dude, are you kidding me?
I don't know if it's our first time having a Texas at home, but
probably, yeah. Dude, that is going to be so sick.
First like legit game and right in between the first and second quarter. Yeah, it's man, like I can't even explain it. To be in front of 100,000 people is going to be really quite special.
And I also I got a video from one of my buddies, Ellis, who obviously works under Saban at Alabama, and he's such a great dude. But I see a video of him drinking out of the U.S. Amateur Trophy
20 minutes ago,
and which is news to me. It seems like the USAM Trophy has been repaired. I'd heard rumors from sources that the trophy had gotten a little banged up the night before.
Yeah, it took me about 4 hours to break it. So it's got a apparently it's fairly new, but they had drilled like this wire through the top to keep the top of it on, because it apparently just had been falling off. And it's kind of a poking hazard. If you try to drink out of it, it'll poke your eye out. So you kind of have to bend it out of the way. And yeah, we snapped that thing right off.
Oh, I mean, that's such a shame too, with knowing you get a big trophy with some form of cup in it. And that just is a no brainer after you win the USAM.
You can't have a wire sticking out of it. You got to move that out of the way. So now it's, now if you tip it at all, the top just falls off.
Oh, shoot. That is awesome, man. I wish I had that problem, but that's a good problem to have. All right. So, you know, I've known you a long time, Nick. I heard about you probably when you were 12, 13 years old, of a kid out of Greystone that was shooting all these low scores. And, you know, you kind of take everything with a grain of salt with like what a country club member tells you. It's like, oh yeah, like this kid's going to be great. You know, you just always, until you see him or you meet him. And I remember the first time I'd met you, I definitely got a sense of, okay, this kid's different. And we don't typically get that in Birmingham, Alabama. You know, we get good players that come up, but it, to me, like you're just come up with Jeff Curl, who is a great friend of mine and who caddied for you at the US Amateur, just his mentorship. I mean, to me, you two guys, just like, what did he see in you at that early age? And just with Jeff, like where did that relationship begin?
I think it's just my work ethic, to be honest with you. He saw something that I've told people for a long time. I really feel that God has given me a gift, and I've seen people throw that away based on their work ethic or what they do off the golf course. And I promised myself that would never happen to me. And I was fortunate enough. And as you know, I grew up around a group of guys that were better than me, and you included. You know, I grew up playing golf with you and Seb and Trey and Curl and all these guys that beat my brains in for 3 and 4 and 5 years. And it was really cool for me to watch that next level of golf. And you know, you guys went on the PGA Tour, and I just knew that if I could get my game in a place to where I could compete with you guys, then it just gave me that much more confidence going and competing against the kids that I was playing against.
Yeah. And one of the big events that we always played back here, and this has probably started 3 or 4 years ago, that Wolf Snake Cup, which a lot of people Wolf Snake, what is that? It's like we had two teams with Jeff Curl being the captain of one, Sepp Straka being the captain of other. And we draft teams and we play a Ryder Cup style match. And Nick was one of the picks being, you know, you were probably playing when you were 15, 16 years old. Is that right?
I think I was 16 was the first year I played it.
Yeah. So just, I mean, I remember one of the Wolf Snake Cups, you came down the stretch. I'm pretty sure you won the cup against, I think, Sam Love, beating him on the 18th hole. Like, I mean, just even you just talked about the confidence you got playing against us, and just, you know, with your work ethic that came with playing against PGA Tour players, you know, was that the first time like winning a big match like that in front of, you know, older guys like us? Did that mean something to you at the time?
It's just the positions that I was put in by you guys. Like you just said, that final match, and it's nothing big, but there's still, you know, a couple hundred people watching. And, you know, I wasn't under that growing up. And I think that helped me. I think that next year was when I won the junior, and I started to get more and more confidence based off of these, you know, little scenarios around Greystone and playing around you guys. And, man, it only helped me. And even though it's, like you said, it's our little thing at Greystone, it's just a little like, you know, team versus team, like you still kind of feel it.
Absolutely.
Like you don't want to lose, and they're all your buddies. And that's what makes it, you know, that much more fun, is, you know, you don't want to get beat by some of your buddies.
I remember you and Trey Molnax were going at it, and y'all both played really well that day. And I think you had like a 360 lip out. I think Trey won the match, but I'm pretty certain that after that match, you didn't like come hang out with us. You went to the back bay and started hitting balls and working on your game. Like that's like, you're just wired different. Most other people would, you know, your age would just go hang out and with the boys. But to me, you're just wired differently that way. Like when you have failures, you try to go work even harder for the next time so you won't fail.
Yeah, it's weird. I've had a couple of people ask me, like, I dislike losing more than I like winning. And golf's a weird game when it comes to that. If you take it in that manner, you're going to be practicing a lot more than celebrating. But no, man, I just like that little feeling of defeat. What, you know, whether you know you play poorly coming in, or you know you blow up in the last hole or whatever that may be. Everybody's had that scenario come up. It's only pushed me, and the success is fun, but. And as you know, you've had your run-ins with that. It only legitimately lasts 2 days. You know, like now I'd have to go, you know, I've got the next week. I'm playing it. Everybody starts at zero and it restarts.
And your, like your come up was different than everybody else. Like you weren't, you know, in the same schooling system throughout your entire life, which I think makes you unique. You know, you grew up in Birmingham. You're in a great place in Greystone where you have everything in front of you. You have Jeff Curl helping you. You have great coaching, good golf courses. And now like your wife moves, your dad has changing jobs. He's intelligent from what I hear and met him before, and moved to Greenville. Then you moved to Huntsville and now you're at Alabama. What sort of challenges did that pose for you just for your development as a golfer and human being?
It was hard, man. You know, growing up in Birmingham, I knew everybody. I knew everybody that I went to school with. It was pretty easy to make friends. I played every sport. And I kind of had friends when we moved. I moved in my freshman year. To Greenville. When I'm not, you know me well enough, I'm not the very outgoing. Like if you know me, I'm outgoing, but if you don't, I'm pretty shy. I kind of keep to myself.
Right.
And it was tough for me moving there because I didn't go up to anybody. I didn't make many friends. And you know, because of that, I, you know, started to become unhappy, didn't play well, grades started to drop. And actually there was a point, I was still playing baseball, but there was a point where, I was going to quit golf. I was just going to go play baseball. I was playing so poorly. I was hurt and it just kind of started to become a spiral, to be honest with you.
How old were you then at that time?
15, okay. 14 or 15. Then we moved back. My parents or my dad moved me back to Huntsville, kind of around a group, of guys. I knew a couple people there. And then, you know, two guys in particular, you know, Scott Weaver and Brad Dahlke were kind of introduced me to people. And I got, I enjoyed playing golf again. They had a cool little group, about 40 or 50 guys, and it's nothing super competitive, but it got me enjoying the game again. And from there I started, you know, I got my work ethic back. I wanted to practice again. I loved playing. And then from there it transpired into what it is now.
Yes. And one of the other Birmingham connections, we mentioned Jeff Curl, but he told me a story that I thought was pretty funny about just your schooling coming up, that Jeff would even, he would call your mom and he would go to the school to check you out to go deer hunting in the sixth grade. Is that kind of like where your schooling is? It's like, I'd rather be in the woods or I'd rather be on the golf course.
So I was at Berry Middle School in like sixth, seventh, eighth grade. And so Jeff's wife, Christy, is a big dermatologist under a dermatology firm in Birmingham. And when I was there, we had our, I think we had, it was either 5 or 10 unexcused absences per year. And then if you had an excuse, like a doctor's note or whatever, you can miss as many days as you want. So I apparently missed 52 days of school excused because Christy kept writing me doctor's notes. And this school legitimately thought I had cancer. They thought I had a staph infection. Because I kept getting dermatology notes. And Jeff finally, he stopped because he would come in there with all camo on. He'd come in there with camo and boots, like, hey, I'm checking him out. He's going to a doctor's appointment. I'm like, Jeff, man, you can't come in here with camo on. Like, it's not. And finally, to a point where I think he got on a first name basis with our attendance people. And they finally were like, as soon as he walked in, like, doctor's like, yep, check me out.
We got to get that staph infection fixed. Of course, yeah, Jeff would be wearing camo, like not even, not even trying to hide that they are about to go in the woods and hunt some deer.
No, I mean, he's pulling his Polaris out right in front of the school with the, it's like, bro, you gotta hide it a little bit.
It's amazing. Oh gosh. Well, you kind of talked about just, you know, your failures and how they lead to successes and make you work harder and how you really just would rather never lose. And it, like, that fuels you even more than winning does. So, and I think it's most evident in your match play record. Like, I never have gone to our broadcast team and say, hey, we need to make a graphic for something. Like, I'm so new to this, it doesn't seem okay for me to go and say, hey, this is what it should look like, this, we should do this. But your match play record's just a joke. You're 30 and 2 over your last 32 matches. I mean, looking back on those last 32 matches, or just match play in general, what about match play puts a fire in you?
I'm a fighter, man. I don't give up. It's weird to say, but I will grab things from certain people that make me mad, whether it's he didn't give me a short putt, or he's fist pumping, or he's, you know, being arrogant, even if he isn't. And I will like grab these things that, you know, tick me off or get agitated, and then that fuels me. But most importantly, I've learned over the last 2 years that, you know, if I have a game plan and stick to that, and they beat me doing it, hats off, great by you. But you know, some of the reasons I've lost, you know, those matches or matches before is because I will get out of my routine, or, you know, I'm two down and they stuff one, I've got to hit it close, and you make a mistake. Like, okay, like, just because they hit it close, like, I can still hit it 20 feet and make a putt, it doesn't mean I have to change my, you know, what I was going to do beforehand. And I think Trey actually said that to me, on the 16th hole. And, when I was playing Sam, actually, it's like, hey man, wherever he hits this, like, I think it was a left pin at 17 at Legacy. And he's like, wherever he hits this, like, you're still going to hit this 20 feet. He's like, it's a great shot. Like, you don't have to pin seek, even if he hits it close, like, you can make a 20 footer. He's like, make him make a birdie. And I think that's something that stuck with me, especially, you know, over a long, you know, 36 hole day or marathon day. It's like, the more I can keep my emotions in check, you know, keep what I'm trying to do, not let the crowd get to me, it's only helped me.
You know, that's maturity in your game, and just having an overall sense of how to win in match play. And that was kind of what the sense I got from Jeff Curl of what the game plan was for the week was that. And I don't know why I was so taken back or surprised by that, because when I think of somebody as good as you are and as powerful and talented as you are, I would think that you would try to just play as good as you possibly can and just try to intimidate the person in front of you. But really, and I started thinking about it even more, it's like, wow, this is just, it's next level thinking for somebody your age.
Yeah. I just go into these matches, and I think some people, like, I'm not trying to beat somebody 7-6. You know, my goal is to get up on them and then basically suffocate them. Like, I'm trying to make them run out of holes. I'm trying to get a lead to where they know, or they feel like they're going to have to start making birdies. And that's when they're going to start giving me holes, or, and obviously when you're playing against a really good player, you know, that mentality may change a little bit, but it's still, you know, you're sticking your game plan. You're not doing anything crazy. And I think that's helped me when I do get a lead. It's like, I don't have to play smarter. Like, I'm just going to continue to play the exact same way that I've been playing. And if they make some birdies, great. If not, then they're going to run out holes.
Well, that wasn't, it's that first match you had at the US Amateur, and we're not going to really get into the stroke play thing. We kind of covered it in the broadcast, 5 over through 7, you make it to match play, which I thought was a crazy great feat in itself, just to work your way back. That tells what type of player and a fighter you are. But Gordon Sargent in the first round, like, he's a guy that grew up in Birmingham. You played against him your entire junior career, a guy that I'm sure you want to beat the crap out of every single time you played since you're 10 years old. And to get paired against him in the first round, I got a sense that after that match, that you two's relationship is really strong. And I don't know if that's always been that way, but to me, you two look like two guys that have a lot of respect for each other. And whoever won that match, y'all both knew that the other one had a really good shot to win the US Amateur.
Yeah, I think growing up, obviously, like you said, in the same place, we, you know, going to different schools, we grew up against each other. We grew up rivals. And it's not that we didn't know each other. It's just everybody pushed each other against us. We were always compared to each other. And I think I was fortunate enough to go out to Denver beforehand. I hadn't played any golf in Denver with the Walker Cup team practice squad a couple of days early, and helped me out a ton just with the altitude, and had a couple of nosebleeds. But
of course,
yeah, it was cool just to get to know him on a more of a scale than just a golfer. And I think he was the same way. We'd played against each other here and there, but didn't really see each other. And I think just to kind of, we both have mutual respect for each other, and I respect the hell out of his game. He's number one player in the world for a good reason. You know, his accomplishments stand for itself. But and I honestly, Jeff talked about it a lot, that just with my start and, you know, hitting the wrong ball, four putting, making a tough bogey, being 5 over 3 7 to 3 putting the last hole to drawing Gordon in the first round, which I think a lot of people said it was either this, it should have been a semifinal or a championship match.
That's what I said when I saw it.
he just said, he's like, man, this is destiny. Like this was supposed to happen. And we both went out, played a great match. And then, you know, I received a really cool text from him after, just being like, hey man, like, I just want to say, congrats, like, you're the best player here. Like, nothing but respect, wish you all the best. And, so just coming from somebody like that, somebody that I respect and look up to, and obviously what he's done for amateur golf and putting us, on a spotlight was really cool. And, obviously nothing but respect for him, and really looking forward to teaming up with him here in a couple of days in St. Andrews.
And, you know, when I think about you guys' friendship and how that's going to continue to evolve, being the same age, playing, college golf against each other and then professional golf together, like, who's to say that your relationship won't blossom into something like, you know, Jordan and JT's? And I'll tell you this about those two guys. They want to beat each other worse than they want to win sometimes. Like, they want to beat each other so bad, but it fuels them into being their best selves. But at the same time, when they're playing together as a team, they just feel like they can beat anybody. And I'm curious if you think your friendship will kind of blossom with Gordon. It's similar to, I mean, you could see each other, you know, for the next 20 years, and y'all could be playing on teams, you know, for a long time. And I think that relationship you two have could really, really be something.
Yeah. Like you said, it was really cool just to get to know him on a bigger scale. And I think I'm curious to see what Captain McCool will do with some of the pairings this week. But it would be really cool for me, and it would be an honor for me just to go over there with him, you know, two guys growing up from Birmingham, going overseas to represent something more than just us. And it's something that I've circled on the calendar for a long, long time, playing for the United States and playing alongside guys that I've competed against my entire life.
So I want to dive just a little bit into your USAM, just kind of match by match, anything that stands out. But can we start with the round of 64 match? I know we talked about Gordon and just overall the theme of it, but what stands out to you in that match with Gordon?
I told Jeff this. That was probably the most nervous I was all week until the finals match. I felt that I had a very nice summer leading into that, and I still felt that I was being compared to other people. And honestly, I felt that I had something to prove in that match. Whether that was true or not, that was the mindset I took to it. And obviously, like I said, he's the number one player in the world. It was a highly anticipated match, and it was a way for, this is a nice way. It was a way for me to try to show myself and show what I had to offer. Not just the people I'd played with and already knew, but on a grander scale. I took that to heart. I knew how he was playing before. He's obviously, he's a heck of a player and drives it unbelievable. He's one of the few guys where Jeff hadn't seen him hit a ball, and we're like, man, this kid's gonna hit it 20 yards by me on every hole. And finally on number five, I hit a really, really, really good one down the middle, and probably as good as I could hit one. And he hit this little like low tee, like pinchy cut, like 15 yards by me. I'm like, man, he's a generational talent. He's gonna be a superstar.
Yeah. I wish I had a 370 yard chippy cut. I need to get that one in my arsenal.
Yeah.
So round of 32, round of 16, you kind of breeze by Connor Jones and Bowen Moss, 4-2 and 5-3. But that quarterfinal match with Jackson Koivun, I mean, that match was all over the place, man. Like, I thought you were going to like totally win that match on maybe the 16th hole or so. But just it seemed like that day you compared to all the days, to me, that match in particular, you didn't necessarily have your best stuff, but you got the job done in one.
I've told a lot of people that have asked similar questions, like, well, you know, on the six matches, like, you know, how do you play? And I'm like, you're always going to have the one match where you either should have lost, you don't have your stuff, something bad goes wrong, you know, you're not putting it good, you're not, like, something's going to go wrong. And that was that match. And I told Jeff the night before, I'm like, man, I have a weird feeling about this match. I don't know why. I have a bad gut feeling that this one's going to go a good ways. And it was, you know, I made two mistakes early, had two of the wrong clubs. I think it was on like 5 and 7 or something like that. Or yeah. It was something early on. And I let it linger. Ended up losing some holes, didn't capitalize on some stuff that I should have because I was upset. And I felt like I got control back on like 14. I think I made birdie on 14 or 15 or something like that.
Yeah. That's what I thought. You were going to slam the door and then hung around.
And I three putted 16. It's like, man, like, and I just kind of, it was kind of a deja vu moment. It's like, look, man, like we can kind of let this go or like, you know what I mean? Like I had three putts and two hazard balls during that match. And it's like, okay, like this is my tough match. Like if I can figure out a way to get through this one. And then obviously 18 kind of had my chance. You normally don't get two chances like that. That was in a pretty rough body, kind of drove in the front bunker on the playoff hole. I hit it left, not a good leave at all. And it's funny, the way I hit these shots out of the rough, playing with a pretty open club face, and I kind of hood it going back, and I can't catch it with an L wedge. Jeff likes to hit it. Jeff likes to use L wedge. I can't, for whatever reason, I can't get it enough ball on it with an L wedge. So I use a sand wedge. Use a sandwich all week, and for whatever reason on this shot, we both agreed. I'm like, if I hit a sand, I can't keep this on the green.
No,
it's like you're gonna have to hit the L wedge and then just try to trust it. Like it's your only option. And actually, I hit it, came out well. My only goal was to get inside of 25 feet, and you know, have a chance to go to another hole. And I thought he was gonna hit a better bunker shot than he did, and kind of gave me honestly a second life. I hit a bunker shot at 12 feet and I made it and still thought we were going to another hole. And fortunately got the job done there.
Yeah. That putt you made was not easy. It probably had maybe 5 feet of break left to right down the hill.
Four or five feet. It was weird that day for whatever reason, Jeff and I, our reads, we normally do a really good job reading putts, and for whatever reason, they weren't matching up at all. Like we were seeing
all over the place.
We were like a foot apart on every putt. It's like, well, I guess we can split it and play it somewhere. And for whatever reason, we both pointed at the same mark at the same time. It's like, if you can split the edge of this divot, it's in. And I were like, as soon as he said it, I'm like, perfect, let's do it. And then hit some poor putts later in the match. And you know, it was just kind of over it. And like, look, man, like if you like, all you can do is hit a good putt. Like if you miss and you hit a good putt, I can hang my hat on that. But, you know, and hit it perfect. It crested exactly the mark we were looking at. And they went right in the middle.
So cool. And most of the time guys are so nervous about the semifinal match because of all the things that are on the line for, you know, you could play the US Open next year, you get in the Masters and just have an opportunity that next day to play for the USAM. But I kind of had a sense on the coverage that you weren't as nervous as the other guys.
I wasn't. I talked a lot. And as you know, I talked a lot with Brett McCabe. I've worked with him a lot over the years and I talked to him a couple times throughout the week and he helped me just get my mind in a way where I felt like I could compete at my best. And I think something that we talked a lot about is, you know, there's a lot of noise, whether that be, you know, PGA Tour Accelerated, you know, the Masters, US Open exemptions. There's a lot that kind of, you know, is around that USAM. And I think in the past, I've just tried to ignore it all. I'm like, no, it doesn't matter. It's not there. And something that he kind of told me, like, man, just embrace it. Like you can't tell your mind what to think. It's going to think what it wants and, you know, just embrace it, bring it all in, bring the crowd in, like take a breath and then tell yourself what you're going to do and do it. And I think that helped me, right, man, like it's there. I can't not think about it. But I still have to execute what I'm going to try to do. You know, the golf ball doesn't know who's hitting it and, you know, continue the process that has worked all week.
Well, you embrace it, got the win against Parker Bell, winning 3-2 for the 36 hole final against Neil Shipley, who kind of became the darling of the U.S. Amateur, just in the fact that he, you know, the day before in his match, you know, winning on 17, just pumping up everybody in the crowd, fist pumping everyone. And I just felt like he was going to be a problem that day against you, because I felt like the more people that showed up and the more more birdies he made, that he would kind of, it would almost be like an away game for you. The fact that he could rally the troops. Did it feel that way out there playing Neil?
It honestly did all week, to be honest with you. I think for the first match, it felt fairly even to me. I felt like a lot of people were just there to watch golf. And I think the second match I played the Colorado native, and it was probably about 98% to 2% on the chanting. And then I played the young kid in the Sweet 16, I think. And I think a lot of people are kind of rooting on him. I think he was 15 or 16, which is another amazing story. And I played 4 USAMs, and this is my first made cut. And just for somebody that as young as him, he's not even committed to a college, to have the week that he did and win 2 matches was pretty neat. And then I played
Jackson the X, and then
Jackson, and then for whatever reason, there's a lot of Auburn fans in Colorado. I don't know why. And then the Parker Bell and Neil, and you know, as you said, Neil kind of became an overnight sensation with some of his posts. And I think I got quoted at some point. I was talking to Jeff, and I think somebody overheard it, that I liked being the villain. And I don't know why. I used the crowd's energy that was against me to motivate me. I think something, I watch it all the time. I think it was the 03 Red Sox Yankee series where, you know, they're down 3-0 against the Yankees, and, you know, they come back and win, and how they talked about being the underdogs and the villains, and using that against them to fuel them. And honestly, like, that was kind of what we talked about, is like, let's make the crowd be quiet. That's what I wanted to do all week. And that's something we talked a lot about in the finals match. And, you know, the putts on 9 and 10 was to make the crowd stop. Like, let's
make
the
crowd stop.
They got quiet. And that was honestly something that I just used to fuel me. And like, you know, Brett kind of said, like, let's embrace it. Like, it's there. It's hard not to think about it. Let's use that to fuel us and use that as a motivational factor.
Yeah. And I kind of noticed on 10, 11, 12, 13, I could sense a little bit of a faster pace. Like, you're just a little off of the golf swing. Like, mm-hmm. just, it seemed like you were starting to think about winning the U.S. Amateur at that point. And I think about the drive you hit on 14T. And to me, hitting that fairway on 14 was the most crucial shot you had hit in that entire championship. Because I felt like if you missed that fairway and you let Neil dictate that hole, and I mean, you end up winning the hole with a bogey after Neil hit a crummy second shot. And then you actually followed him and tried to screw up the hole as well. But still, that tee shot, I mean, you kind of pimped it as well, right? After you hit it, you started just walking dead straight up the fairway.
Yeah. Well, one of our goals to start the day was energy. It's a long day, consume your energy. He came out kind of fiery, throwing fist pumps. And Jeff's kind of like, hey, man, like, we've got to keep our energy. Got to keep our cool no matter what happens. Bad shot, good shot. It's like, stay the same. And I think, you know, kind of middle later on in that other match, I started showing emotion that I've never shown before. Partially was to shut the crowd up. And that was kind of when I got a little bit out of my comfort zone. I got too high. I wasn't able to calm back down, started to hit some loose shots. And I think that kind of showed on 13, you know, knifed a wedge over the green. And we got on 14. He's like, hey, man, like, this is a big tee shot. Like, you know, kind of his crowd started to get loud again.
Yes, they did.
And he just kind of looked at me. He's like, hey, man, like, this is a big tee shot. Like, if you hit this, like, you know, we're in good shape. He's like, I'm saying it over my tee shot. I'm like, all right, man, like, it's time to do something. Like, this is, you know, that's those are the moments I like being in. That's why I practice. That's why I do what I do. To be in that moment where you've got to hit a golf shot.
Well, yeah, you did. And I remember you walking off of the green, and yeah, we had a camera zoomed in on you. Just kind of shook your head right after you won. I think it was either right after you had tapped in for bogey, but it was just like it was almost like a wake up moment. Like, all right, hey, we're still in this. And then next thing you know, he misses his putt and now you're dormy with four to go.
We kind of misjudged the wind. I didn't hit a great shot, hit a great nine iron on 14. The lie kind of got it. I thought the wind was in off the left and it was in off the right. And obviously as soon as I hit it, I knew it wasn't in off the left. And Coach Jewell got mad at me after. It's like, I wasn't trying to hit it there. I knew I had miles right. kind of pulled it off the line, hit it left and made a mistake in the, most crucial moments of the match. But that two putt from off the green kind of settled me. And at that point, I was just trying to tie the hole. I didn't think that he was going to miss that putt, on 14 and fortunately gave me a four up lead with four to play and felt, pretty confident from there.
You had already been selected at the beginning of the week for the Walker Cup. And, I know that's had to be a goal of yours heading into this year. Have you played any link style golf besides the Bandon Dunes U.S. Junior Experience Cup, or I guess that would have been last year?
No. So I played, I played Bandon. And I played a little golf course in South Carolina. I think it's called Bulls Bay. Maybe that kind of reminded me a little bit of the Duke golf course. But no, like I have no experience with that. And I don't think many guys on the team, I think a lot of the guys on the team, it's actually their first Walker Cup. And then I don't think many people have played overseas as well. I think we've got a fairly young team, with Caleb and Ben also, same age as me. And I think it's going to be an experience that a lot of us are going to have to kind of build off each other, learn things when we get over there, kind of how to deal with jet lag and, a couple other things that are going to come with that.
And, how do you plan on preparing for St. Andrews? Are you going to go find like a simulator around and just figure out how to get around that place?
No. So there's a simulator at Cherry Hills, that we did, the four Walker Cup guys that went early. We played like a little 2v2 match on the simulator, which was kind of neat. But Captain's kind of already, mentioned maybe a lower bounce of a wedge or something like that. And honestly, for me, it's going to be pretty similar. I'll probably putt it a ton from off the green. I've heard the greens are fairly slow. A seven iron or a pitching wedge or something to kind of bump it. But I'm going to kind of keep it on the ground all week is kind of my plan behind all that.
Man, playing the Walker Cup at St. Andrews just sounds like a dream come true. That's probably the one that everyone has circled to make. But, so many Walker Cup teams, looking back, like even now, everybody kind of goes and looks back at teams that were like highly successful or players that were highly successful and say, wow, looking back now, that team was probably the best Walker Cup team of all time. And we continue to always play that game. And even when we have a team as young as this team and you look at all the young, fresh faces and names, and I kind of see this young team to be potentially one of the best teams of all time. And people probably just don't know how good this next little generation of you guys have that are coming up.
Yeah. And it's like you said, we've got a really strong squad, and it's unfortunate Michael couldn't make it. He's got an injury in his back. But the five that were selected, I would confidently take against, any amateurs in the world. Like it's a really, really strong, first five, and obviously the 10 that we have now. I think I'm looking forward to getting to know them a little bit more than just golf. Mm-hmm. I grew up playing against them, especially Surratt. All I do is play against them. I'm a rival against them, you could say, different SEC schools, and to all come together and play for something more than just us, and to play in a team to represent our country and to root on each other and to grow in kind of a brotherhood for the week is going to be something really cool and something that I've looked forward to for a long, long time.
Well, I'm not going to keep you any longer. I know I'm really excited to watch how you do at the Walker Cup, and hopefully you and Gordon have a lot of success over there. Hopefully you guys get paired together as well. I think that would be really fun to watch. Little Birmingham action. But again, I'll be cheering you on at the Walker Cup and this year in college. I know you're excited to get back with your teammates that flew in to come support you at Cherry Hills, and just kind of as you go. I mean, what was that? Having those boys fly in, that probably was the highlight of your week almost.
Yeah, it was so cool, man. I knew Cannon, there's a chance of him showing up. He kind of mentioned early in the week that if I had made it all the way, he was going to show up.
But even Coach Sewell, you know, stayed an extra day, watched the round of 64 against Sargent, and then flew back out Saturday, had my parents come out Saturday, had some other guys from Huntsville fly out and watch me. But honestly, just to kind of hear the crowd the way it was early, and then have those guys show up. I think they showed up on the seventh green, the first match.
I heard them. I think I heard them on that green. They like yelled after you made birdie.
I had no idea that Thomas Ponder and Grizz, my roommate, and I had no idea that they were going to come out, and just to kind of see them on the seventh green, like it gave me a jolt of energy. And I kind of made that putt. They got real loud, and they kept that energy for the rest of the day. And I needed that. I needed somebody out there that was going to kind of fire me up, and they did just that. And I think I've said it a couple of times, it just shows the kind of bond that we have built here at Bama. And it's something that I had no idea was going to happen going to college. And it's been really special. And you know, a couple of these guys on the team we're going to be pretty close for a long time.
Yeah, I saw the smile that was put on your face after they had showed up. I was like, Alabama's here today. So it was really cool to see those boys show up. And I don't really ever root for Alabama in anything, but I will root for Nick Dunlap as he takes on his sophomore season at Alabama. So go do your thing, man. I know you got a lot going on, a lot on your plate, but always going to be a Nick Dunlap fan. I'm excited to see what is in store for you, man.
I appreciate it, man. It's been cool following you and watching these podcasts, and I appreciate you having me, and I look forward to talking soon.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Really fun to hear those two Birmingham, Alabama products chop it up, and Nick reminisce on some of those games he played with Smiley growing up. And here he is, a Junior AM and USAM champion, and headed off to play in the Walker Cup at St. Andrews. That's all for this week. We will be back here on Monday recapping the action at the final event of the PGA Tour season, the Tour Championship at Eastlake. So tune in for that. And then, of course, on Tuesday, live on our YouTube, we will be reacting to Zach Johnson's captain's picks for the 2023 Ryder Cup in Rome. Go to that page now. It is at The Smiley Show, SMYLIE, on YouTube to subscribe and get notifications when we go live for that show. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you then.
The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.